For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome. We're 2 weeks into our 2-month spring practice period. For this practice period, we're looking at the teachings of 12th century Chinese Zaodong or Soto master Hongzhi. Some of you are formally doing this practice period, some not, but for those who aren't, he was a teacher in the lineage that we practice here in the 1100s, and expressed this meditative awareness in a really evocative way, incorporating kind of Chinese Taoist influence, meditative poetic expressions that capture some of this, what this meditative awareness is about. For the people in the practice period, we recommended 6 passages from this book, Cultivating the Empty Field, which I translated 30 years ago. And I keep going back to, and each time I find more. I've been going through in the first Dharma talks these 6 different sections, and today I'm going to talk about this section titled All Beings Are Your Ancestors. So first I'm just going to read through it, and then I'm going to go back and talk about this teaching. And again, this teaching is an expression of meditative awareness, and kind of gives us a way of accessing aspects of this Zazen practice we've just done. So Hongzhi says, fully appreciate the emptiness of all dharmas, of all phenomena. Then all minds are free and all dusts evaporate in the original brilliance shining everywhere. Transforming according to circumstances, meet all beings as your ancestors. Subtly illuminate all conditions, magnanimous beyond all duality. Clear and desireless, the wind in the pines and the moon in the water are content in their elements. Without minds interacting, wind and pines, or moon and water, do not impede one another. Essentially, you exist inside emptiness and have the capacity to respond outwardly without being annoyed, like spring blossoming, like a mirror reflecting forms. Amid all the noise, spontaneously emerge transcendent. So that's this section, this practice instruction, these Dharma words. And I want to go back over them and talk about what Hongzhi is saying. And then we'll have some time for discussion. Fully appreciate the emptiness of all dharmas. So this word emptiness, I've been talking about, it doesn't mean nothingness. And actually, I mentioned Kaz Tanahashi, my old friend and great translator of Dogen, who was a century later and brought this tradition to Japan. Kaz's translation of the Heart Sutra, which we sometimes chant, which talks about form and emptiness, Kaz translates this as boundlessness. So emptiness just means that all things are empty of separation, of separate essential existence. And I resisted that translation of boundlessness at first, but more and more I'm kind of feeling the appropriateness of that. Fully appreciate the openness, the boundlessness of all things. When we say emptiness, it means that there's nothing separate. There's nothing as fundamental to anything. Everything is totally interconnected with everything else. So this section's Hongzhi says, to begin with, fully appreciate the emptiness of all dharmas. When you do that, then all minds are free and all dusts evaporate in the original brilliance shining everywhere. So I look back at my notes from the Chinese characters that I worked with 30 years ago. All minds are free and all dusts dissipate is another way of saying that. All dusts means all phenomena, all of the ways we get caught, all of the sense objects, all of the things we get hung up on, all of the objects we attach to. When we fully appreciate the emptiness, the openness, the boundlessness of all things, then all minds are free, and all dusts, all attachments dissipate in the original or fundamental, we could say, brilliance shining everywhere. So this is the kind of the starting point that Hongzhi talks about in the very beginning of his practice instructions, where he says the field of boundless emptiness is what exists from the very beginning. You can reside in the clear circle of brightness, that this fundamental or original brilliance shines everywhere. Our practice is not to discover or create something new, but to realize something that is here from the very beginning. And it's our attachments and our hang-ups, our all of the things that we get caught on that get in the way of that. When we fully appreciate the emptiness, the boundlessness, the openness of everything, then our minds can become free. All dust dissipate, and the fundamental brilliance shines everywhere. We get a taste of this in this sitting practice. It's not that there are, you know, lights shining everywhere, and you know that we have some psychedelic experience in every moment of zazen, but we get some taste, some glimmer of some deeper energy, some deeper reality, some deeper possibility when we sit. And we don't always realize it, but it's what brought you to this practice, and it's what brings you back to this practice. All minds are free, and all dusts dissipate in the fundamental brilliance shining everywhere. And then Hongzhi says, transforming according to circumstances, meet all beings as your ancestors. So this idea of the ancestors is important in Zen. The character he uses here is Tsong, or Shu in Japanese. It means the source. Meet all beings as your ancestors. So all beings right now, so it's not the ancestors necessarily from way back. It's the ancestors right now. All, when we fully appreciate the emptiness of all things, that means that everything in the world is creating this situation right now. Dependent co-arising. So creation is creating this creation right now. Every person you've ever met, every being in the whole universe is creating what is on your seat right now. But beyond that, meet all beings as your ancestors. See that each person is in some way part of the lineage of your ancestors. So we, during our all-day sittings, during this practice period, we're chanting formally the names of the ancestors going back to Shakyamuni, and also the names of our women ancestors, the names of great women in India, China, Japan, and America. So we have this lineage of Zen or Buddhist ancestors that we appreciate, the people who kept alive this practice going back to Shakyamuni Buddha 2,500 years ago in what's now northeastern India, and before him, that allows us to do this practice. But also there are many lineages of ancestors. There are cultural lineages of ancestors. There are ancestors we can look to who created music we appreciate or literature we appreciate. I walked yesterday with the Science March downtown, so there are great lineages of scientists who created our body of knowledge now that helps us understand how the what the world is. And there are great lineages of social activists who helped keep alive, the possibility of social change. People who marched in the street for abolition of slavery, who help us march in the street now for abolition of mass incarceration. Suffragettes who helped bring women the vote less than 100 years ago. Now people are marching in the streets to help keep women's rights alive. So many lineages of ancestors, many different kinds of ancestors. There's genetic ancestors, not just human beings, all of the different creatures who share DNA with us, animals and plants even. So here Hongzhi just says, meet all beings as your ancestors. In Tibetan Buddhism, they talk about seeing each person as having been your mother in a past life. So to realize our connection with all beings, transforming according to circumstances, so in each situation, we see this new possibility of meeting all beings as our ancestors. Then Hongzhi says, subtly illuminate all conditions, magnanimous beyond all duality. So this subtly illuminate all conditions is interesting. Wisdom, the word we use for wisdom, prajna, really means insight. It means to bring light to the situation in front of us. So wisdom is not, in Buddhism, is not exactly some body of knowledge. It's to see clearly. How do we bring our awareness, how do we bring clear vision into the situation we're in? And as the situation changes, how do we see it clearly? Subtly illuminate all conditions. This is subtle because all conditions have all ancestors as their sources. So to recognize the complexity of any situation, when we want to address some problem in our life or in the world, how do we subtly illuminate it? How do we see the complexity of all, it's not necessarily possible. Maybe it's not ever possible to just fix some situation. But we can bring our attention to it, to subtly illuminate all conditions. Magnanimous beyond all duality. So our discriminating consciousness is usually thinking in terms of right and wrong and good and bad and making judgments about, good people and bad people and good. We do that. That's how our consciousness works. But Hongzhi is saying, subtly illuminate all conditions, magnanimous beyond all duality. How do we see with a wider view? So right view in Buddhism is to listen to all views. It doesn't mean that there are not harmful views and helpful views, but how do we not get caught up in self-righteousness. Subtly illuminate all conditions, magnanimous beyond all duality. Wide view, open view, fully appreciating the openness of all dharmas. Meeting all beings as our ancestors. So then Hongzhi says, clear and desireless. Well, you know, we all, as human beings, as electromagnetic beings, we have attractions and aversions. But clear and desireless, Buddhism is about not being caught up in obsessive desire, desiring objects of attachment. Desireless, being content, not having too many desires. Or if we see our desires our aversions not causing harm based on them. So Hongzhi talks often about nature metaphors for the way meditative awareness works. This comes from this Chinese, maybe we could say Taoist, but just this nature awareness. So clear and desireless, the wind and the pines and the moon and the water are content in their elements. Without minds interacting, wind and pines or moon and water do not impede one another. So the wind blowing through the pines isn't disturbed by the pines. The pines are not disturbed by the wind. It's just this natural function. The moon, light flowing down, on the water streams, doesn't bother the water. The water doesn't bother the moonlight. This is a model that Hongzhi uses, this kind of natural interaction for how we can be in the world with all of the complex, difficult beings around us, this natural functioning. Easy to say, sometimes difficult. We all know the difficulties we have sometimes with the world and with the beings in the world. But still, clear and desireless, the wind in the pines and the moon in the water are content in their elements. So how do we find contentment? This doesn't mean just passively accepting things when we see harm in the world or when we see somebody causing harm to themselves or others. We can still respond, and he's going to talk about that. But how do we see this functioning in a natural, flowing way? So this is also a meditation instruction. During our zazen, how do we, when we're sitting, and one of the things that Hongzhi keeps coming back to is the way in which we respond to visual objects, sound objects. So there's several places in the practice instructions where he talks about this. For one example, and we'll talk about this more, but in the very first one he says, the deep source transparent down to the bottom can radiantly shine and can respond unencumbered to each speck of dust without becoming its partner. The subtlety of seeing and hearing transcends mere colors and sounds. So as we sit and we are aware of the wall or the floor in front of us, we don't have to be caught up in the colors as objects or the sounds of people shifting in meditation hall or people walking upstairs. We don't have to be caught by them. We can be aware of sounds without being obstructed by them. So this is, he talks about this in different ways. There's also this saying by Shuto, one of the early ancestors in this lineage, who talks about the blue sky not being hindered by the white clouds wandering. So the clouds wander through the sky and the clouds don't mind the sky and the sky doesn't mind the clouds. So how do we be present, sit upright, keep breathing, not be caught up in worrying about the quality of our breath, just enjoy inhale and exhale, not be caught up in some sensation of warmth or cool, just notice it. Hear the sounds around us without being caught up in the sounds. This is an instruction in how to actually be present and upright on our cushion. In one of the practice instructions, that's one of the six that's available to people, mentioned for the people in the practice period, graciously share yourself. It says it another way, wide open and accessible. Well, it says, with the 100 grass tips in the busy marketplace, graciously share yourself, wide open and accessible, walking along, casually mount the sounds and straddle the colors while you transcend listening and surpass watching. So there's colors, there's sounds. We don't have to be caught up in doing anything with them. So how do we just be present? And as he says here, without minds interacting, wind and pines or moon and water do not impede one another. They're content in their elements. So from that, Hongzhi says, essentially, you exist inside emptiness, or we could say you exist inside openness or boundlessness, and have the capacity to respond outwardly without being annoyed. So this is not about being passive. This is not about being numb. You have the capacity to respond outwardly without being annoyed, like spring blossoming, like a mirror reflecting forms. So how do we respond? This is key. The point of these meditation instructions and the point of this practice is not to become some virtuoso yogi meditator, but how does this help us respond? How does this help us be helpful in the world? Essentially, you exist inside this field of emptiness and have the capacity to respond. Doing this practice helps us helps develop our capacity to be responsive. We have the capacity to respond outwardly without being annoyed. We can see situations, difficult situations even in the world, and have the capacity to respond outwardly without being annoyed. We don't even have to get angry at all the terrible things our government is doing. We can just find ways to respond helpfully, without being annoyed, like spring blossoming, like a mirror transcending forms. And then he ends, amid all the noise, spontaneously emerge transcendent. Amid all the noise, amidst all of the fuss and difficulties of our life and of the world, spontaneously, right now, just come forth, emerge, transcendent. And I translated this word as transcendent, and I looked again at the characters, and transcendent is okay, but, you know, this word transcendence, there's this idea in religious studies of transcendence and immanence. Transcendence being, you know, seeking something up there in space, holy, you know, transcending, getting beyond the situation. That's not exactly what this means here. Literally, it says, amid all the noise, spontaneously emerge from the single ground. So it's also being this, being grounded. Amid all the noise, spontaneously come forth, like the bodhisattvas coming from the earth, from this situation. So we can transcend. But it doesn't mean escaping from our situation. It means being grounded. So amid all the noise, spontaneously emerge transcendent, free from our attachments and our conditions, and yet responsive. So that's a close reading of this text. I want to go back and read it all again. And then questions and comments and your responses. So this material, you know, I've been, after having worked with it a long time ago, I keep dipping back into it, especially for sessions, and then now we're doing a practice period on it, and each time I find more. Like the koans and like Dogen, these texts, and like Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, we can keep going back and finding more to encourage our practice. And the point of this study is not to learn some body of knowledge again, but to encourage and support us in our practice. So let me read this one again and then hear your comments or responses or your reflections on it and the ideas or responses that emerge for you. So, fully appreciate the emptiness of all dharmas. Then all minds are free and all dusts dissipate in the fundamental brilliance shining everywhere. Transforming according to circumstances, meet all beings as your ancestors. Subtly illuminate all conditions, magnanimous beyond all duality. Clear and desireless, the wind in the pines and the moon in the water are content in their elements. Without minds interacting, wind and pines or moon and wind do not impede one another. Essentially, you exist inside emptiness and have the capacity to respond outwardly without being annoyed, like spring blossoming, like a mirror reflecting forms. Amid all the noise, spontaneously emerge transcendent. So, I'm interested in your comments, your responses. Part of this emerging transcendent is that you're not emerging somewhere else. It's not about being somewhere else. It's about actually being present here. So, comments, responses, questions, please feel free. Asian.
Who's a lean annoyed the way I mean annoyed? Because, and I think it said emerge without appearing annoyed.
It says respond outwardly without being annoyed. I don't know. What do you mean by annoyed? I don't know what Hongzhi means. We have to talk about it now in terms of how we use this material.
Yeah. Well, okay. I really like not to be annoyed. and sometimes that's possible when I have more patience available to me. And I actually generally intend. Always.
But sometimes you're annoyed?
Sometimes there's too many things to respond to.
And, yeah. Dig it.
So, if we can manage to somehow within that respond outwardly without being annoyed, is it okay to still sort of feel a little?
I think we feel what we feel. We have to acknowledge what we actually feel. But I think what he's saying, well, this is just my interpretation, but we don't have to express annoyment. We can feel, that's annoying. That's too bad that, you know, science is not being funded, for example. I'm annoyed at that. I feel like that's not just annoying, it's harmful, and it's stupid, and it's, you know, so, okay, how do I express that I want to support science, for example? Or what, you know, there's all kinds of things. How do I express that without, you know, something extra? And I think that's possible.
Okay, yes, I think that is possible. And, yeah.
That's just an example. Sometimes when somebody's hassling you personally, it's harder to not express some annoyment, but...
Well, there's responding appropriately to the situation, and, you know, sometimes the annoyance is a little extra. But you can respond appropriately to the situation.
Sometimes it might be appropriate to allow the other person to hear that there's annoyance going on. That might actually be helpful for them to hear that you are annoyed by their way of expressing themselves. And that might help them to hear that, oh, I should... Anyway, it depends on the situation. And sometimes we hit it right on, and sometimes, you know, we have to keep trying. But what he's saying is respond outwardly without being annoyed. You don't have to be annoyed. You can just see the situation and, okay, what do I do? Maybe you don't even need to feel annoyed inside. You can feel, one of the basic aspects of our precepts is to be helpful rather than harmful. When we see harm, okay, we can just see these are the conditions. How do we can be annoyed or not, but we can still respond. Other comments on that or anything else? Yes, Sid.
Something I appreciate very much in the repentance and in other things we cover is this differentiation between anger and hatred. And for me, anger is anger, and I don't think that's going anywhere, at least in my life, sometimes. But when I get angry about someone making me angry and I want to destroy that person, that's something really problematic. And so I'm grateful for this practice of not getting angry at my own anger.
Yeah, we say in our precepts to not harbor ill will. So anger arises, we feel irritated or more, but then we don't turn it into ill will or hatred. We can just say, okay, that's my anger. And, yeah. Bo, you had something?
Yeah, I mean, I was totally hooked on this annoyance. I'm not annoyed by it. It feels like such a contemporary word to have kind of in the midst of all this other stuff, but I really love that.
Well, there was a contemporary translator involved.
For me, I mean, it just conjures annoyance. It's like impatience, you know, and an expectation of how a thing is going to go, and then another thing is introduced to it, and I get annoyed. You know, that now it's not going the way I expected it to. And so I think it's prompting me to think, like, just slow down. You know? If you can, just kind of take the moment and be in it a little bit more. Because so often for me, being annoyed, I feel bad about being annoyed. Then afterwards, I have to apologize for being annoyed eventually. So those are sort of the thoughts that's conjuring.
Well, yeah, slow down is part of all of this. Yeah, thank you. Other comments? Anyone? Yes, Ted.
So, and I like your concept or your explanation of emptiness as being without separation. Emptiness in Buddhism has always been a little bit of a difficult thing for me to grasp because you start reading, you know, the mind is emptiness, darkness is emptiness, everything sort of has emptiness. And I come away wondering, well, if I don't have a counterexample, it's hard for me to understand. There was at least one thing somewhere that didn't have that feeling. That's why I feel to get it a little bit better than everything else. But this is, I think, a little more accessible for the concept, as you expressed it, to simply say that what this means is that there aren't firm, fixed boundaries between them.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Caroline. Yeah.
Ego is what has, that isn't empty. it's interesting. I just think the contrast is so intense, you know, between that emptiness and realizing that there is no, contemplating that idea of emptiness and then annoyance. And it's so, if you really saw emptiness, all those things that we get annoyed about would be nothing.
Yeah.
I think that is not sort of what it's about. And yet, you know, and yet there's that wonderful compassion, I was talking with an assistant principal that I really got off on the wrong foot with when I first started at that school, and then I was able to understand why I'd reacted as I did, and we had good conversations. So, yes, the last time I was there, and I had to ask him for somewhere to do my work, which is what our conflicts have always been about, and you know, he told me to go use the old nobles. And I'm like, well, is there a table in there? And he said, I think there's tables and desks and stuff in there. And I'm like, tables and desks are different. You know, because I want to use a table, I don't want to use a desk. And he's like, yes, I know, Karen. And he just had that really nice way of saying, yes, I know tables and desks are different. That was like, oh, that's right, I'm getting in my crappy place again. And it's like, it's so nice when somebody knows you and they know you have a crappy place. They just give you that smile that says, don't go there. And you're like, all right, you know, this is friend, not foe, you know. I'll just go over there and see if there is what I need and not get in an argument with them about it before I even go. So anyway, I don't know if all that makes sense, but it's like, it was nice for me not to be mad at myself about being crappy, but to feel like he was just giving me that little reminder.
So we can hear about emptiness, but still that idea of the self, it comes up and it does stuff. So we have to be patient with ourselves. Yes, Kathy.
I'm just thinking about how this relates to meditation.
Yeah. Maybe if there's one more comment. Jerry, did you have something? Yeah, that's the way you said that. It was interesting because we have this meditation instruction to take the backward step that turns the light inwardly and illuminate the self. So to step back and say, oh, I'm crabby now, or I'm annoyed, or, you know, to acknowledge. That's what you were saying, Sid, to acknowledge our stuff to ourselves and maybe sometimes even to others, and then, yeah, changes the situation. Yeah, please.
In my crappiness yesterday, I was working on this computer program and it was giving me this error. And I literally spent 4 hours investigating the error.
Oh dear. I'd have been crappy too.
And I said, why don't you just ignore this error? So I just did. I just ignored it and moved on.
Hooray. Well, thank you all very much. And we'll continue working with... with these practice instructions.